science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
So now I have Sam Fraser-Baxter, who's recently graduated from a Masters of Science Communication from the University of Otago. Now, first up today, Sam, we're talking about a shark attack last Friday in the Catlins. Can you tell me what happened there?
Well, it was actually on Thursday. It was at 2 p.m. at Kira Bay, which is deep in the Catlins. And basically what happened was there was a group of boogie boarders catching waves, and there were dolphins around, and suddenly a French tourist was bitten on the legs by a shark, and she was pulled out of the water by her friend she was boogie boarding with, and she was stretched up to a nearby house and then helicoptered to Dunedin Hospital.
Shit.
Yeah, quite hectic.
Yeah, totally. Not kind of what you expect from your holiday in New Zealand, really.
Yeah, not at all. I was actually following it all go down live on Stuff, and they were basically drip feeding the story, and I was, yeah, just going crazy.
Yeah, I bet.
Thought it could have been a great white, but the doc scientist, Clinton Duffy, who's a shark expert, he's actually been studying great whites for some time at the Northern Tetis at Stewart Island, has come out in the media and basically said that he thinks it is likely to be a seven-gill shark, which is a lot less deadly and a lot more placid.
And so are shark attacks like this common?
Certainly not in New Zealand. For a coastal nation, we have experienced a very low incidence of shark attacks. Since 1852, the International Shark Attack File has 40 shark attacks down for New Zealand. Otago has experienced the highest in New Zealand with 10. And I believe Otago has experienced 3 fatalities, all of them in Dunedin.
But I guess, though, like in the big scheme of things, it's not really a high number when we consider deaths by other sorts of means, you know, car crashes, for example, or, you know, things like that. But there is still this kind of intense public fear around things like shark attacks, aren't there?
Yeah, you're dead right. I mean, shark attacks are like lightning strike events. They're very infrequent and they're very, very difficult to predict. And it's common knowledge that they hardly ever happen. And these kind of statistical analogies where someone might say to you, you know, you're more likely to be killed by a coconut falling on your head, or say a vending machine falling on top of you, like a freak orgy, anything ridiculous. It's probably more likely to kill more people annually than a shark attack. But, you know, the fear persists, and that's basically because, you know, vending machines, they're not that scary. They're not this kind of deep water monster with lots of sharp teeth who is very stealthy and sometimes attacks you. So despite, you know, shark attacks being so rare and uncommon, the public is still very, very scared of them, and I think we always will be.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess it's this sort of iconography of this terrifying-looking shark with, you know, very sharp teeth versus like a vending machine. You know, you don't really see any horror movies coming out about man killing vending machines. So yeah, it's kind of this popular media construction almost that these animals are this creature that should be feared as opposed to kind of just left alone in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Jaws has a huge legacy, and it kind of painted a picture of sharks as these kind of bloodthirsty demons who are out to get humans, and that was completely false. And now the prevailing scientific rhetoric is that shark attacks are likely to be a case of mistaken identity. Sharks don't have hands, so to explore a foreign object or to understand what something is, like a baby, they bite it. So maybe if they had hands, shark attacks wouldn't happen because they could give something a good feel. But that's not the case, so they bite things. And many sharks, including the revered great white, are opportunistic feeders. So they scavenge, they feed infrequently, and you know, you commonly see great whites feeding on whale carcasses. So if there's a foreign object floating on the surface, they're very likely to investigate it, whether it is a piece of rubbish, a boat, or a surfer or a swimmer. So yeah, we basically now understand that shark attacks are rare and sharks aren't necessarily out to get us, and if they were, many more people would die at the jaws of a shark each year.
Right, absolutely. If they actually sort of had this thirst for human blood, then we would be seeing these cases far more frequently than we currently do.
Yeah, exactly. But this is also where the plot thickens. Our hunting strategy of the great white shark, the species understood to be implicated in the most attacks worldwide, will often bite once and then let their prey bleed out. And scientists commonly observe this when great whites are hunting seals and sea lions. And scientists basically believe this happens because when you've got prey which is bleeding, they're normally going to be thrashing around and fighting for their lives. And great whites, their eyes are very vulnerable, and if they're scratched or injured and they go blind, the shark will basically die because it can't hunt. So scientists think that the sharks basically let their prey bleed out. And if we put this in the context of great whites biting humans, you could argue that maybe they bite once and then kind of swim away and might possibly be waiting for the human to bleed out. And most of the time the human can get to the beach and receive emergency treatment. So that's another kind of school of thought.
Interesting.
But yeah, it is.
It's slightly more terrifying than...
Slightly more terrifying.
But that human by mistake, more of a tactical sort of move on the shark's behalf.
Yeah, but the prevailing scientific rhetoric is that shark attacks are likely to be a case of mistaken identity.
I see. And so also, from what I understand, there's been some, in terms of government policy and response in Australia, there's been some interesting happenings around that. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, so shark management in Australia has been a very, very controversial issue over the last 7 years or so. In Western Australia, they had the highly infamous shark cull in 2014, and that was basically in response to 7 shark attack fatalities in Western Australia between 2010 and 2013. And under kind of mounting public pressure, the Western Australia responded with what they called an imminent threat policy, which basically allowed them to put these large baited drum lines into the waters around populated beaches. And the aim of the drum lines was to basically catch large sharks and kill them. The premise being that if there are less large, dangerous sharks around popular beaches, there would be less shark attack fatalities. So they did that. They had a 10-week trial of the drumline policy. And in that period, 172 sharks were caught. 50 were tiger sharks measuring over 3 metres. So those sharks were pulled up and shot in the head and dumped at sea. and no great white sharks, the species believed to be responsible for every fatality in Western Australia since 2000, were caught. So essentially the drumline program, dubbed the shark cull by the media, was a complete failure.
Right, and that's also, it's also like a very interesting way that they chose to go about killing these sharks. This almost kind of spectacle in a way, like shooting them in the head as opposed to any sorts of other means of being able to reduce these shark numbers.
Yeah, it was a very interesting strategy, and all the images of sharks being hauled up and shot and the shot in the head ignited outrage on social media, and it very quickly became a global thing where environmentalists worldwide were condemning the cull and calling on the Western Australia government to stop it. So after 10 weeks, basically they finished a trial, and later on in the year they announced that they wouldn't continue with it. So shark attack, shark management for any government is always going to be really controversial, because you've got these very high profile, emotional, traumatic events which obviously the media loves, because fear makes great news, and people love to read about things that might attack and kill them, whether it's ISIS or cancer, anything that is harmful. So for governments, managing these very infrequent events can be very troublesome.
But interestingly though, it seems like they, it's been quite a different sort of public response to the government's initiative versus the response in New South Wales to the nets that have been in place for a long time, and nobody really seems to question them when arguably they were even less effective than the Western Australia's, you know, recent trials that you've just told me about.
Yeah, that's correct. So nets have been in place in New South Wales since, I think it's about the 1950s, and when the shark cull occurred in 2014 in Western Australia, there were actually protests on beaches around Sydney against the shark cull, saying, hey guys, this is a bad thing you're doing by culling sharks. And meanwhile, 50-100 metres offshore, there were shark nets out in place, and it was almost as if these protesters in New South Wales were completely oblivious of the fact that the shark nets were floating offshore. And during the shark cull, when the Western Australia government was getting so much heat for what they were doing in Sydney, there's at least, I believe it's sort of 40 shark nets killing hundreds of sharks each year. And the reason shark nets are maybe less controversial is because, for one, there's a massive public misunderstanding of what shark nets actually do. So many people think shark nets create a total barrier between swimmers and sharks, almost like a swimming pool. But the purpose of shark nets is exactly the same as the purpose of drumlines. They're to catch and kill sharks, aiming to lower the population of sharks so there's less shark attacks. And secondly, that, you know, the shark nets are just out of sight and out of mind. They're not this kind of large hook that's hauled up by contracted fishermen, and shark, you know, those, then those sharks are shot in the head. Sharks just drown in shark nets. So the public basically just can't see them. And thirdly, they've been in the waters since 1950s. So the governments are very hesitant to take them out just because of the public's reception to the government taking them out. So they might be like, hey, if if they've been here for 50 or so years, why would you take them out if we think they've worked?
Mm.
So it's all really, really kind of high-risk political movements from governments embarking on any kind of shark management.
Mm. Absolutely, and I guess if they were to remove the nets at any point and then an attack was to happen, then they'd receive so much heat from the media and the public.
Yeah, they'd definitely get blamed for the attack happening. Mm. And, yeah, they'd lose voter support.
Mm. And so also, from what I understand, a few weeks ago there was a fatality in Western Australia as a result of a shark attack. But how the Western Australian government responded, it's actually been quite a change in their approach to this situation.
Yeah, there's been a massive change. So 3 weeks ago on Easter Monday, a 17-year-old girl was killed in Western Australia while she was out surfing with her father. And the government were basically very measured and cautious in the way they responded to the attack. The Western Australia Premier, Mark McGowan, he waited 6 days until Sunday after the attack to comment on it. And his reasoning was that he didn't want to politicise the event. And this kind of rhetoric definitely comes after the shark cull 3 years earlier, which was so controversial, and it basically just had the public up in arms. So governments in Australia are now very, very wary of the way publics can respond to shark management measures. And he's come out saying that the science has said that shark great white populations have been decreasing since 2000. The shark cull didn't work, and perhaps we need to be looking into other ways that we can prevent shark attacks from occurring.
Mm.
And their kind of solution or way of going forward is personal shark deterrents. And personal shark deterrents are basically devices which emit electromagnetic frequencies into the water. And to a shark, that frequency is basically like someone screaming in your ear. So if the shark goes near the person with the deterrent, it's going to swim away. That's basically how they work.
Mm-hmm.
So the government's promoting these deterrents, and they're also looking at subsidising them for Western Australia water users. So they cost about $500 each, and I believe the government's looking at trying to subsidise them, so they're only about $300 each.
Mm.
And basically what that's doing is it's shifting the onus of risk away from governments and back towards the public. So instead of the government trying to put in a shark net or a baited drum line, they're saying, hey guys, why don't you wear these? And now the surfers or the swimmers, who are the risk takers themselves, are responsible for their own safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's a better solution to trying to manage these kind of lightning strike events, because shark management is very, very costly. And the question is, should taxpayer money be spent on protecting a very, very limited group of the public?
Mm, absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much, Sam. That was really interesting, and it's really cool that to have you with us for the next couple of weeks talking about science news. So, yeah, have a great day.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was Dear Science.